Hey guys, my name's Ken and I'm on staff here at Every Nation Melbourne. And if you're here for the very first time, we have a few visitors here today. We are week 14 of a 18-week series going through the book of Ephesians. And we're talking about identity because identity is important. Identity is important to the way we see ourselves and then what we do with our lives. How I see myself, what I believe, the labels that I allow to be put on me by me, the internal labels I stick on myself, the external labels that other people put on me that I accept, or even the external labels that other people put on me that I reject, all that stuff impacts how we live our lives. The way we see ourselves impacts the way we think, the way we react when someone says something to us. Identity is so important. And you know, even it's politicized these days, isn't it? There's a whole bunch of identity politics and stuff, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying how important identity is for everyone, especially for us here in the church when we have a call to honor God and make disciples. Do we believe that we can do that? Are we effective in doing that? And the degree that we are effective in doing that or believe that we can is to the degree that we agree with God's identity of who he is and who we are. So have we got the slides up there? They're coming up. Awesome. No, we don't. All right. The first slide did say identity is individual and corporate. Just to throw that out there. Identity is both individual and corporate. And I don't know if you've been picking that up as we've been going through this series, but identity is something that applies to us individually. It's also something that applies to us corporately. And depending from where you come in the world, you will be better at one or the other. You know, the Western world is very good at individual identity. That's kind of where we excel at, almost to a fault. We focus so much on the individual. If something good happens, something bad happens, it's all about the individual's effort. And it's great. We celebrate heroic efforts in sports or in the arts or politics or wherever. We celebrate all that kind of stuff. We laud the individual, and sometimes we forget about the team that got them there. And it, maybe if you're from the Eastern world, an Eastern mindset, the East is good at the corporate identity. You know, this is my family. This is my heritage. These are the people who've come before me. This is how we as a nation act. These are our values nationally. And so, you know, the East is good at corporate identity. The thing is, the kingdom of God requires both. We need to be good at both. And we kind of need to look at sometimes, you know, in the West we have hyper individualism. Well, you know, you don't just come to church and just sit. Well, maybe you do, and that's your choice to do that. But the fullness of what God has for us as Christians isn't just to come to church as an individual, receive a religious product, pay our fees for it, known as the tithe, and then go away and do our own thing throughout the week. That's not what we're called to do. That's not the fullness of Christian life and expression. So in some ways, the church is called to reject hyper-individualism that the West has. On the other hand, the church also critiques the Eastern mindset that everything is fully corporate. I also need to take responsibility for the call of God that's on my life. I can come along, I can be a part of the community, I can do whatever God's calling me to do, but I also need to be responsible for my own actions, my own thoughts, the way I interact and connect with different people in my life, and the witness that God is calling me to have. You know, identity is individual and corporate. It's about the part as well as the whole, both equally. The scriptures in the New Testament often use the analogy of the human body. It's a perfect analogy, isn't it? You know, the finger is important, but it's important because it's part of the body. The body's important, but it's made up of different parts. So just wanted to throw that out there. Just been thinking about different concepts with identity. My little identity is statements. When you get 14 weeks in, you're kind of scratching the bottom of the barrel. And there we go. All right. But let's move on to Ephesians chapter 5. From verses 15 to 20, just a few verses today, and we're going to finish up with communion today. And this is kind of leading into communion, but it's also leading into what we are doing as a church on June 17 in 2 weeks' time. We are going to be feeding you. That's what Family Feed is all about. And we you know, as a church, maybe if you're new here, I'm a new pastor, three months in. I've been in ministry since 2000, well, been in campus ministry since 1998, been a campus missionary here in Every Nation Melbourne since 2004, and but a new senior pastor, still on my P plate, so to speak, still probationary, can probably be removed at any moment by the powers that be. And so be ready. Matt, it could be you. You might have to step into the gap. We'll see how we go. So come on. And I think Derek wants Matt to step into the gap right now, actually. So, but you know, I'm a new senior. Yeah, we want to do new things. We want to try new things. We want to innovate. We don't want to just do the same thing over and over and over again just because that we've been doing it that way for the past 15 or so years. We want to come up, God, what's the best way we can be used by you, empowered by you to honor you and make disciples? If it means doing something different, then let's do something different. If it means moving from Richmond to the center of the city, then let's do that. If it means changing up the way we do our small group ministry, then we'll change that. If it means doing communion a bit differently, then we'll do communion differently. We'll do it in a way that we believe is going to impact the mission of honoring you and making disciples. Because we know, I know, as a staff, we are fully on the same page. We are called to honor God, make disciples. Church planting, campus ministry, board mission. That is who we are. And that's why we wanted to do a series on identity from the book of Ephesians. All right, so let's read this. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore do not be foolish but understand what the Lord's will is. Well, it's not very bright there. Verse 18, do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, even just reading that last part, giving thanks to God the Father for everything, you know, that's everything. It just hit me. That's the good and the bad. God, I want to give thanks to you for all that's going on in my life. I want to give thanks to you. You know, I just have a vision of us being a people in Every Nation Melbourne that we are thankful for what God has done in our lives, what he's doing in our lives. Almost kind of independent of the circumstances. Now, not being foolish about it. You know, acknowledging that all of us go through different seasons and different trials and different things that are happening in our lives. But we can be thankful, and I think a thankful people are a powerful people. I think a thankful people are an empowered people on mission. So let me show you why I think that. So. Let's break this passage down. Verse 15. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise but as wise. Be very careful. Why? So let's have a look at the context. Last week we looked at how we are the light. Who are we? We are thankful people. That's part of our identity. But also last week we looked at we are the light. We are called to be light. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness. Paul says, but expose them, rather expose them to the light. And here's the promise. Everything that's been illuminated by the light becomes light. And so my big point last week was sometimes we hide things in our lives. We make peace with the fruitless deeds of darkness in our lives. We have something to do with them. And God says, have nothing to do with them. Rather expose them. And so I was kind of really just encouraging us, let's be a safe place where we can talk to one another about the stuff that we're going through, and so that we can let the light of Jesus shine on what's going on in our lives. We can share that. You know, different people have shared with me at different times stuff that they're going through. I've never gone and said, get out of my presence, you awful sinner. I said, no, come on, man. I love that you share that. That took strength to share that with me. You know what? The promise is that when we expose the deeds of darkness in life, what happens? Is that when they're illuminated, they become light. Our weakness becomes a strength. You know, something that used to hold us back becomes a platform for a testimony to launch us out into different things that God has for us. And I've seen that in my own life over and over again. And then what's interesting, what I found interesting last week, I don't know if you guys found this interesting, probably found it boring, but Paul, he quotes from Isaiah 60, but it's like this whack paraphrase. It's like all over the place. It's completely, but it's a paraphrase of Isaiah 60, verse 1, which says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of the Lord has risen upon you." The nations in darkness and a light has come to them. But Paul says, "Awake, rise up, O sleeper. Rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." So there's similar concepts there, but it's not a direct quote. It's taking great liberties in that paraphrase. So in that context, it then says, be very careful then. When he says, awake, rise up, O sleeper, from the dead, and Christ will shine upon you. Then, be very careful then how you live. Why do we need to be very careful? Because we are light. The King is shining on us. Who is Jesus? He's not just some guy that gives out tickets to get into heaven. That's not who he is. We treat him like that many times. Oh, okay, Jesus, I'll say some words that acknowledge your existence, and then I'll come to you and I want to receive this ticket so that when I die, I get to go and not be in pain, but I get to go to heaven, and, you know, who cares? Well, that's why I'll just live my life the way I want to live in the meantime. We can treat him like that. But that's not who he is. You know, part of this identity series is to say, who is God? Well, Jesus is the King. He's the King of the universe. Fully man, fully God, died for us, rose again from the dead, has inaugurated a new kingdom. He's the true human the true King leading and calling a new humanity. That's what is the phrase that's used over and over again in Ephesians. I'm building a new humanity. I'm tearing down enmity between the Jews and the Gentiles. It's no longer the people of God racially and ethnically defined. It's all peoples who come to me. Jesus is the King. So in light of Jesus being the King, being a light and shining on us, we need to be very careful. Live like light, not darkness. You know, sometimes we play games with the King of the universe. It's like if I walked up to Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, and said, hey, you know, started joking around and started poking him, and, you know, hey, Malcolm, just slapped him in the face a little bit. You know, started to play games with Malcolm. If I walked up to Donald Trump and just started, you know, poking him, trying to tickle him or whatever. And I was just playing games with the most powerful man on the planet, or Vladimir Putin, or Premier Xi from China. I just went up and started, you know, joking around with these guys, pulling faces at them. You know, we're not called to play games. Jesus is the King of the universe. He rules. He reigns. Oh, this is Pastor Jay, who's in Manila at the moment. He's just messaging me. Maybe some of you guys can message him. Stop messaging Ken. He's preaching at the moment. There we go. That's the third message. Oh, there we go. Come on. Hey, Derek, can you message him? Say hey. He'll probably just message back. He should tell Ken to put his phone on silent. All right. Okay, I'm putting it on silent now. There we go. Live like light, not darkness. Live like Jesus is your King. You know, we all have a King. It's not about if we have a King or not, if we have a master or not. It's which master do we have? You're fooling yourself if you don't think that you have a King that you serve. You serve some King. It's whether you serve the true King or not. Jesus is the true King. What King could you also serve? Well, just looking at the previous passages in Ephesians, there's sexual immorality, so you could serve the King of sex. Greed, you could serve the King of money or material things. And that's a huge thing, isn't it? Material things, especially in our comfortable lifestyles in Melbourne, most livable city in the world. Or we could treat power as our King. We are called, be very careful. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Live like you worship, that you orientate your existence around Jesus. That's something I say to Jesus. He says, I want to live my life like you are the King of the universe and that I orbit around you, that you are the most important thing, person, power, that my life is for you. You're the one who gave his life for me. I want to remember that. I want to honor that. I want to honor you, God, before I make disciples. You know, at different times in my life, I have lived with making disciples as my King. Though I have put that first. I've put ministry, fruitfulness, and outcomes. You know, I've been on missionary support since 2004. I've got to have results. I've got to put photos up so people can see the things that I've been doing. And so that becomes a pressure to me. Instead, you know, when I've done that, it's been like, oh, who am I worshiping? Am I worshipping my own competence, my own significance because of what I'm able to do? Well, that's the wrong king to worship. That's a king that will crush me, that will enslave me. But if I put Jesus first, if I honor God first, I said, God, I want to orientate my life, my existence, my family life, my schedule, my finances, everything. I want to orientate it around you, not something else. Verse 16, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. You know, some people use the fact that the days are evil as an excuse to not take opportunities. Oh, the days are evil. Whoa. Days are getting darker. And it's crazy out there, Ken. You know, standing up for Jesus on the campus, well, that's hard. I don't know. If I did that, maybe that might impact my grades. That might impact my popularity with people around me. I don't think I can stand for Jesus. The days are too evil. Or, according to Paul, it's because the days are evil, make the most of every opportunity. Because things are dark, make the most of every opportunity. Sometimes in the face of evil, we freeze up and we start to speak things over ourselves that aren't true. Like, I can't do anything. What difference can I make? You know, the problem's too big. Melbourne's got 4.5 million people. How many people are actually at church at the moment right now? It's you know, my workplace, Ken, they're always blaspheming. They're always making fun of me. They're always asking me why Christians don't help other Christians. They're always talking about child sex offences in the Anglican and Catholic Church. They're always talking about all this sorts of stuff. It's just too hard, Ken. The days are too evil. The problem's too big. Well, you know, I actually think the days were more evil in the time of Paul, in a sense. Rome, a despotic Roman emperor, you know, military rule, occupation, all that kind of stuff. And your confession was Jesus is Lord, when everyone else's confession was Caesar is Lord. And so to be a Christian in those days was to be subversive and radical and treasonous to the Roman Empire. And what empire do you need to commit treason against? Let me throw that out there. What emperor do you need to say, you know, you're no longer Lord? You're no longer Lord anymore. Material things. I'm committing treason against you. I'm now giving my allegiance to Jesus. All hail King Jesus. That's a great song to sing. And thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. Awesome worship today. But singing it and then living it is a different thing, right? That doesn't mean we don't sing it, but it's just, we just got to challenge ourselves. Singing things and living them out are totally different things. I mean, they're not totally different. There is overlap there. Make the most of every opportunity because you can. This is what we've been talking about. This is why we've been talking about identity, right? For the past 14 weeks. We've been talking about it because the Bible, our identity is that we are one with the King. We are in one organic unity with Jesus. Jesus is the head. We are the body. The church is his body. What's the relationship between my head and my body? That we're actually one, right? We're one organic unity. What would happen if I separated the body from the head? What would happen? I'd cease to exist, right? So the point of me, I am in one organic unity with Jesus. When God the Father looks at me, he sees, there is Ken, he's part of my son. Jesus is the head, I'm part of the church, his body. I am one with the King. I am a new human. Jesus is making a new humanity. He's teaching us a new way to be human, new human values, new human priorities, new human experiences. He's giving that to us, a new humanity. I'm part of the new humanity. I'm actually the answer to what's going on out there. You know, outside these four walls, you are the answer. You represent a new way to do things, a new humanity. That's who we are. You're the hope of the world. You have the message, the good news of what God is doing in the world. He's making all things new. From the micro level of just interpersonal relationships, someone's going through a fight with their brother or sister or their spouse, you know, from that level all the way to global conflict. We have the message. All the way from just, you know, how do I clean up my yard to how do we solve ecological issues in the world? We have the answer. Verse 17, therefore do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Let's not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. You know, in Ephesians 1 verse 10, it says that God is making known to us the mystery of his will, bringing into unity all things under Jesus. That's Ephesians 1 verse 10. The will of the Father, the mystery of the will of the Father is being made known to us, bringing all things, all people, all aspects of life under the rule and reign of his Son, the King, the true King, Jesus. God wants everything unified under his feet, Jesus, under the feet of Jesus. There's no time to waste. Make the most of every opportunity. And what does Jesus want for us? Well, he wants us to be joyful, thankful, grateful, celebrating, praising. And if you had a great boss at work, would you tell people about how great your boss is? Can you believe how good my boss is? You know, he lets me work from home when I need to, and sometimes, you know, he wants me to come in at different times, but you know, he pays me like 50% more than any other boss would pay me, and he gives me 6 weeks annual leave, and he flies me around, and he really believes in me. And when I come up with a great idea, you know what he does? He doesn't steal the credit, but he says, you know, people try to give him the credit. He says, no. This was Ken's idea. You should be praising. You should be. I'm gonna promote Ken. And it's, if you had a boss like that, would that be pretty cool? Would you talk about that boss? Yeah. Would you be thankful? Would you kind of like, you know what? I'm gonna have a drink in honor of my boss. I'm gonna throw a party in honor. Would you celebrate? Would you just come home and say to your family, "Wow, you know how great my boss is. I told him that you know Josh has been a little bit sick," and he said, "What? You know, I'm gonna extend healthcare benefits to your entire family. So it's time to celebrate." Would you celebrate that? Can we celebrate who our King is? Jesus wants us to be joyful, thankful, grateful, celebrating, praising, just because we're in relationship with the true King, the one who has all the answers. But as we look on, there's a counterfeit to joyfulness, isn't there? It's the next lines in the passage, verse 18. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. There's a counterfeit to joy. Drunkenness, it has a counterfeit happiness. It has a counterfeit comfort. It has a false celebration, alcohol. I mean, alcohol by itself, you know, it's a drunkenness. Don't hear me saying you're not allowed to drink alcohol. That's your personal choice. But read what the Bible is saying, that drunkenness is a false comfort, a false counterfeit happiness. That's not God's will for us. God's will for us isn't for us to have the fake stuff. No, would you be happy with your boss if he paid you in counterfeit cash? No, of course not. That's an awful boss. He's stealing from you. You want to have someone who, you know, if you love someone, you give them the real thing. Unless you're buying like some knockoff kind of counterfeit Prada handbags from Hong Kong or something, then, you know, I'll take one of those to give to my wife. God's will for us isn't to have the counterfeit. God's will for us, he loves us too much to give to us the fake stuff. And here's the thing, it's not just drunkenness and wine being the false happiness. It's all those false kings I talked about before. It's not just drunkenness and wine and counterfeit joyfulness, counterfeit celebration. It's money and financial security. Money and counterfeit financial security. Material things and counterfeit financial security. Buying a house and counterfeit financial security. I love what Pastor Jay says. He had sharing a testimony about being challenged to give tithing and about his work. And he said, your work does not provide for you. The job that you have where you earn money from, that is not your financial provision. That is not your financial security. I am. God was saying to Pastor Jay, I am your financial security. Your boss is not your financial security. Your ability to earn income isn't your financial security. God is. I mean, obviously we work hard, we're diligent, you know, we're all that kind of stuff. But do we... Because, I mean, I think most of us will say, oh, yeah, drunkenness. Yeah, that's counterfeit happiness. Oh, yeah, Ken, yeah, we reject that. Or do you reject counterfeit financial security? And we put the true financial security on the throne of your life, which is Jesus. illicit sex and sexual pleasure. I mean, obviously, God has given sex for sexual pleasure within the marriage, heterosexual marriage context. But what about illicit sex, pornography, sexual fantasy, illicit sex and sexual pleasure? That's a false sexual pleasure in a sense. Comes with strings attached. Even in no strings attached relationships, it comes with strings attached. Because God knows, and He designed human sexuality to be more than something that's physical, something that's also deeply spiritual. And that's not to speak judgment over anyone, of course. No, I've broken my own boundaries at different times. There's forgiveness, and God's in control, loves us, calls us in. But do we worship? Do we look for comfort in illicit sexual pleasure when God says, I will be your comfort? What about achievements and self-worth? I was mentioning before about how I've made making disciples almost a false king. Look at how good of a pastor I am. Look how good of a campus missionary I am. So it's not just drunkenness and wine. It's a whole bunch of other things related to false kings in our life and counterfeit provisions of different things that God says, I will provide them for you. So if you overflow with wine, you get debauchery. But if you overflow with the Spirit, you get something else. And we read about it. Halfway through, it says, instead be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks to God. So if you overflow with wine, we get debauchery. If you overflow with the Spirit, you get thankfulness expressed as songs of praise. You know what the Spirit is doing? The Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit. The Spirit matures us, and this grows thankfulness in us. You know, before I talked about that we are a thankful people. That's part of our identity. We're called to be thankful. I always tell my kids, be thankful for what you do have. Don't complain about what you don't have. What was the big issue of the children of Israel as they were going through the wilderness? They weren't thankful. They kept on thinking, oh, we want to go back to slavery. They had cucumbers there. We haven't got food to eat. We're going to die out here. God, how could you do this to us? And so you guys are just complaining all the time. You have me. Don't you trust me to look after you? My kids, they're complaining about what they don't have. I say, hey kids, let's not complain about what we don't have. Let's be thankful for what we do have. You know, I wonder if we could, and I need to tell myself that as well. I complain about what I don't have. And then I forget to be thankful about what I do have. But the Spirit matures us, and a sign of a maturing people, of a mature people, is that they are a thankful people. You always have that choice. Today, will I complain about what I don't have? Or today, will I be thankful for what I do have? Thankfulness immunizes us against entitlement. Oh, I mean, we can be really entitled. I don't know if this is a global thing. It's definitely a Melbourne thing. We can be so entitled. Man, my coffee's not quite right. Oh no. If my coffee isn't perfect, the right temperature, with no hint of bitterness, if it's over-roasted just a little bit, what do you mean you don't have almond milk? I deserve to have almond milk. I'm entitled to have almond milk. Don't you know I'm lactose intolerant? Don't you know I'm a hipster from Brunswick and I can't be seen drinking dairy? Thankfulness immunizes. This is serious, right? When we become an entitled people, we start to expect people to serve us. We're not called to. We expect people to serve us when we're the ones that God says you serve other people. Entitlement steals the ability for us to serve and connect with other people. What else does entitlement do? What else does thankfulness do? Thankfulness subverts a bitterness. I mean, we can get bitter at times. People have hurt us. And maybe there's some genuine offences and genuine kind of things that people have done against us that right, okay, that's, I mean, yeah, they did something wrong. But then we become bitter about that when we focus on that, when we focus on the injustice someone did against us. And then that bitterness just screws up our life. When God's saying, I don't want you to screw up your life. Let me take care of the injustice that happened against you. I'll look after it. I'm the God of justice. I'll bring things. I'll make things right at the right time. But what I want you to do is to be thankful. And then if we make that choice, then that bitterness starts to dissolve away. Maybe not overnight. Might not happen overnight, but it will happen. What else does thankfulness do? Thankfulness empowers praise. A thankful people are a praising people. You'll enter my courts with thanksgiving in your hearts. Enter his gates of praise. That might have been the wrong way around, but the point remains. That thankfulness empowers praise. It releases worship. It causes us to shine brighter. You know what thankfulness does? Thankfulness releases our true identity. You know, we can be walking in such... this is not necessarily easy. We can be going through real hard stuff at times. Thankfulness doesn't mean that we're kind of just pretending that bad things aren't happening to us. But you know what, God? I'm thankful for you. Everything in my life is falling apart. At the end of Habakkuk chapter 3, there's a hymn of praise. Though there's no sheep, you know, though I'm losing everything, there's no sheep, there's no cattle, there's no figs, there's no vine leaves, there's nothing. Even though I've got nothing, I still have you. And I'm thankful for that. So maybe I can get Derek up, and maybe the ushers can start to grab the communion elements. We're going to take communion together as a family. I want to just kind of wrap up here and touch on what we are doing, our little innovation that we're doing with communion on June 17 and then monthly thereon. But I suppose I wanted to talk about how we're called to be a thankful people. And let me just raise this point. Forgetfulness is the enemy of thankfulness, right? It's when we forget. That's what humans do. We forget different things. We forget what God has done for us. Sometimes we forget the big things. Often we forget the little things. That's why I tend to write things down. I tend to write things and God, you know, God did this for me today. God touched my life this way. God provided for me this way. And I was blessed by that. And I write down those things because I don't want to forget. I don't want to lose thankfulness. And forgetfulness is the enemy of thankfulness. So if only there was something that we did regularly to respond, to remind us of what Jesus has done for us. If only there was something that Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me, so that we could remain thankful. You know, in the traditional churches, the historic churches, our older brothers and sisters, I think of the Catholic Church as our big brother, Anglican Church as our kind of little bit younger than the big brother, but still our big brother. You know, these historical churches, they call communion Eucharist. And Eucharist is literally means... Eucharist, when you get, just hold on to them. Just hold on for a little while. That's fine. Hold on to the elements. And we'll take them together shortly. But Eucharist literally means thanksgiving. It's a time of thanksgiving. Oh, thank you. Just make this. Eucharist means thanksgiving. This sacrament that we take together is something that we do and we give thanks. And so I don't know about you, but sometimes communion is a little bit of a... can be a little bit overly somber. I mean, it should be, I suppose. We're remembering what Jesus has done for us, the price that he's paid. But we, in many ways, Jesus said, but I want you to celebrate this. I actually want you to be happy and I want you to celebrate what I've done for you and the work that I have achieved. And, you know, one thing I can celebrate is I look out amongst us and there are people from all around the world here. People from so many different cultures, different socioeconomic backgrounds. And we're here together because of what Jesus has done. I can be thankful that I have something in common with people from the Philippines or from Africa or from the Middle East or wherever. And what brings us together is what Jesus has done. I want to celebrate that fact. I want to be thankful for that. You know, when our sacrament is Thanksgiving, our remembrance is celebration. When we take communion correctly, we invite the Spirit to overflow from us in thanksgiving. And sure, there's an element of God, you know, you died for us and there was pain and there was suffering involved. But, sometimes we think about our sin and all that kind of thing. No. Let's think about the victory that Jesus won, that this meant that what Jesus did in his obedience to the Father meant that he could become the true King of all humanity and that he rose again from the dead. When we take communion correctly, we invite the Spirit to overflow from us in thanksgiving. We displace entitlement and bitterness and self-pity. I'm thankful, you know, because of what you have done, Jesus, because of my brothers and sisters around me as a family. You know, this is not just an individual thing. This is a corporate thing. No, that because of you, Jesus. Entitlement and bitterness and self-pity can go away, can fall away. I grow in thankfulness to you because of what you've done, Jesus, because I'm allowing you, Holy Spirit, to overflow from me in thankfulness in this time. Worship can be released and empowered. Praise can be released and empowered. I thank you that in this time, when we take communion correctly, a sacrament of thanksgiving, a celebration, a remembrance of celebration, we release encouragement and power from the Spirit. You know, what kind of people will impact this city? Will our entitled people impact this city? Will a bitter people impact this city? I think a praising people will impact this city. I think a singing people will impact this city. A celebrating people will impact this city. Hey, guys, you want to come to my church? Now we just sit around and we're... You know, we're kind of just, you know, we're angry at the world. And we're angry at how dark things are. And do you want to be part of that? Do you want to be part of a community that's just really angry about what's going on in the world at the moment? No? Who wants that? No. Hey, guys, come to my church because there's a community of people from all around the world who get together and we celebrate something new that's taking place in the world. There is a new way to be human. There's a new king who rules the universe. And he is a good king. He's so good that he laid down his life for us. You know what kind of people will impact this city? A thankful people. And that's who you are. You are a thankful people. So one of the things that we're doing, one of the innovations that we're trying out, and we're committed to it, is that on June 17, we're going to have Family Feed. And it's basically going to be our communion service. And if it ties in with the sermon series, then we'll do it. If not, we'll just do a series break. But we are going to meet up together, have extended worship, shorter time of preaching, and then we're going to eat together. The church will provide the food. So, you know, don't be expecting a total all-you-can-eat feast. But there will be food to at least satisfy a significant part of your appetite. And there'll be food. We'll eat together because that's what the early Christians did. The Book of Corinthians talks about getting together, and they literally ate together. They ate a meal together. But not only is it a time of eating a meal together, it's going to be a time of communion. We're going to remember and be thankful and allow thankfulness to overflow from us by a work of the Spirit in our lives. And we're going to minister to each other in that time. Because it's not just about me. It's not just about the musos. We're going to minister to each other. And I'm excited. Because I'm excited about that. The kids will be part of it. It'll be a bit messy, a bit loud. But you know what? I think it's going to be a celebration. Celebrating what Jesus has done.